Welcome to the Animal Voices Show here on 100.5 FM, Vancouver's co-op radio, CFRO, broadcasting live in the downtown east side in unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, February 7th, 2014. I'm one of your hosts, Cynthia Ganatra, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Alyssa Ray.
Hello.
And Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Jackie, Jenny, and Tim are away today. Welcome, everyone. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. And we're also available as a podcast. I'm really excited about today's show. We have two great interviews. The first will be with Gerard, who is a volunteer with Food Not Bombs Vancouver. Food Not Bombs is a volunteer collective that serves vegan meals in the downtown east side here in Vancouver every Friday. And there are also collectives all around the world. So we'll learn more about that. And that Food Not Bombs is a local chapter of an, as I mentioned, international network of autonomous collectives. And they challenge the gross misallocation of resources. Did you know that the money spent by the world's government on weapons in 1 week is enough to feed all the people on Earth for a year?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
I believe it, though.
I know we know a lot of the stats about how much we can feed hungry people by, you know, how much goes into feeding livestock. But I thought that was also an interesting fact. And our feature interview is with Mark DeVries, a director of Speciesism, the movie. In this documentary, Mark sets out to investigate what is really going on in modern farms where animals are used for food and why these animals are hidden away. The documentary takes viewers on a sometimes funny, sometimes frightening adventure, crawling through the bushes that hide these factories, flying in airplanes above toxic manure lagoons, and coming face to face with their owners. The film features many prominent people in the animal rights movement, including Peter Singer, who popularized the word speciesism. We speak to Mark about this documentary, what he learned about speciesism, and why he felt compelled to make this important film. We're also screening the Vancouver premiere of Speciesism on February 14th as part of our Cultivating Compassion event, so check out our website for more info at animalvoices.org. And I've seen the movie, and it was really great, so I really look forward to speaking to Mark later in the show.
So we at Animal Voices would like to send out a special happy birthday to none other than Carl Loskin, one of our biggest supporters. It is his birthday today. He's also an original founder of the Animal Voices show, if you didn't know that. So happy birthday, Carl. And I know he's listening. He listens to our show live every week. Really one of our biggest supporters. Thank you for everything you do for the animals, Carl. And we wish you a special day today. So, as you know, we promote living a vegan lifestyle here on the Animal Voices show, but I think it's not enough to just say go vegan and be done with it. There are challenges in trying to live as a vegan in this non-vegan world of ours, and I just wanted to share a few of my own personal challenges that I recently faced. This was a couple of weeks ago, and it just seemed to happen that like all these things were happening in a row, and it's not always like that, you know, but sometimes these things do happen. So I just wanted to share and see maybe if we could offer some words of support or some solutions or something. So a few weeks ago, I wanted to get the battery replaced in one of my dress watches. So I took the watch to the watch repair store, and in the process of trying to change the battery, the strap broke on the watch. So no problem. I said, okay, I'll buy a new strap then. And they had a lot of pretty matching straps that would do the job. And I chose one that just like matched perfectly. It was great. And the woman flips it over. And to my horror, I see the words calf skin on the back of the strap. And I immediately exclaimed to her, no, I don't want any skin, nothing with skin. And so she proceeded to look through all the other straps to find me another alternative. And guess what? They were all leather. So she told me that the only non-leather straps that she had were rubber, but you can't wear a rubber strap with a dress watch, right? So she then she was being very helpful. She said she would show me all the options of all the straps that she could order. So she pulled out a catalog and she flipped through it all. But all the dress watch straps in there were leather. So what's a vegan to do? I ended up just leaving the store with my broken watch, and I said I would try to find an appropriate strap on eBay, because my default solution for finding hard-to-find items is to always look on eBay, and I admit I haven't done that yet. But it was certainly a trying experience of trying to live as a vegan in a non-vegan world. So you go into a store for a service that seems so benign and simple, and you're suddenly faced with this moral choice that you have to make in a situation where anyone else probably wouldn't wouldn't have had a second thought at the word calfskin when it was presented to them, and they would have gotten their strap changed and then left the store a happy consumer. But that's not the case when you're trying to be a conscious individual and trying to do what you can to cause the least harm. So that's not all. Like I said, this was the week of vegan dilemmas for me. Makeup issues, maybe I'll just briefly touch upon them. Trying to find makeup brushes. I've just recently have started like trying to become interested in makeup at age 38. I've never really wore makeup before. And finally, I'm realizing like this really deep and just really complicated world of makeup. There's all these different products. There's so many of them. How do you wade through them when you actually, like, I'm assuming that most of them are tested on animals. They have all these weird ingredients that you don't know what they are. But then there's the brushes as well that you need to apply the makeup on. And I was looking on eBay for the cheapest brushes because they're all really expensive in the stores. And they all said either made of goat hair or made of horse hair. So once again, you know, trying to be vegan in a non-vegan world, we live in this world where it seems just sometimes that, like, even just the most basic things that you want to use as a consumer, they're made out of animal products.
Yeah, definitely. The good thing is with makeup, there's a lot more vegan brands out there. I actually used to wear a lot more makeup when I was younger, and since going vegan, I've actually stopped wearing makeup. I wear it on occasion for weddings and maybe a special occasion, but I try to wear less makeup now because the brands that are vegan, they're great, and you always want to buy a conscious, ethical brand, but they're expensive sometimes. So I have, you know, my one vegan lipstick, mm-hmm. which I love, and to be honest, I have some pre-gen vegan stuff. So before I was vegan, I have some makeup, and I have this couple different other colors of lipstick, and they might have carmine in them, which we know is the crushed up bugs. And if I'm going somewhere and I feel that lipstick matches my outfit, if I'm going to a wedding, I will wear it. So I'm not embarrassed to say that sometimes I wear things that aren't vegan, but I do always try to make conscious efforts to buy stuff that is vegan and causes the least amount of harm.
One interesting thing I noticed is it's hard to tell sometimes because they might say not cruel to animals or cruelty-free. It just means they're not tested on animals, but they might still have animal ingredients in it. So, yeah, it's sometimes hard to wade through it. Just in terms of vegan dilemmas, when you said that, I thought of getting gifts sometimes that aren't vegan. Here's and how to deal with that. Or medications are very often tested on animals, you know, pain medications or other things like that. So that's something to think about and sometimes can be a difficult choice.
I think it's about doing the best that you can do in this non-vegan world of ours. And speaking of the vegan makeup, just because I've been more and more interested in this, I actually want to do an interview about that whole topic in a couple of weeks. So please do stay tuned for that. But I'd like to maybe discuss and share more of just sort of our experiences, you know, being vegan in a non-vegan world. And just I think sharing is and getting support and ideas from others is probably the best way to deal with these dilemmas when they arise.
This is your big chance, so don't blow it.
We're here to present the cutting-edge radio you want to hear. What about a program featuring just local Vancouver bands?
No market for that.
We have an expert on gospel music.
No.
Our public affairs programs dig deep with voices other stations won't touch.
No.
Programs with First Nations hosts?
Sorry, no market for that.
We've got a lot of shows in other languages for people all over the world. Folk music?
You're kidding, right? Who would sponsor that?
Can't make big bucks with programs people want to hear? You have to go to Co-op Radio for that. Community-owned radio. Now at 100.5 FM, the switch is on.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio. Please do stay tuned for our interview with Food Not Bombs coming up in 5 minutes. But first, a few Vancouver events. First of all, Animal Voices is teaming up again with Drishti Point Yoga Radio in the name of community building and outreach. We are very thrilled to be presenting a series of events around Valentine's Day that celebrate compassion for all beings. The feature event is the Vancouver premiere of Speciesism, the movie. It's Friday, February 14th at SFU Harbor Center downtown. That's at West Hastings at Richard Street. That's set in the Fletcher Challenge Theater. It's a by donation event. No one turned away for lack of funds. And so doors and raffle start at 6:30 p.m. We have a long list of amazing vegan raffle prizes that Allison is organizing.
Should I talk about some of them?
Sure.
Pretty excited about the raffle. So this is going to be a fundraiser to help definitely fund this event that we're having. So just some of the raffle prizes. We'll be having a restaurant gift certificate for dinner for two at Eternal Abundance. We'll be having vegan chocolate from Zimt Artisan Vegan Raw Chocolates. We'll be having vegan cupcakes from both Edible Flowers and Fairy Cakes. Those are the two vegan bakeries in Vancouver. One really nice gift that we'll be having is a gift box of a variety of 36 vegan soaps. That's worth $189, and that'll be donated from the Rocky Mountain Soap Company. And some yoga related prizes as well, books and possibly DVDs. Quite a bit of vegan deodorant from the new vegan deodorants, Bliss Balls that were donated from Sweet Sherbum. We thank all of our donors, and there's going to be more there too.
Oh, and thanks to Joy for donating all the makeup from ELF.
Yeah, speaking of makeup, yeah, that's actually a brand that I'm going to look into because it's actually affordable. So. Cool.
Yeah, it's like $3 for a palette of 140 colors. But anyway.
Really?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, $13, anyway. But still.
Great. And then also part of the Cultivating Compassion, we're doing a yoga workshop on the Saturday. So that's February 15th, and it'll be at Open Door on Main and 14th. And the workshop will be from 2 to 5, and it'll be facilitated by myself, Cynthia, and Farah, who is a yoga teacher and the host of Drishti Yoga Radio. And so the three-hour workshop will include asana practice, some film clips discussing dialogue, and reflection about how we contribute to the health and happiness of all sentient beings. So look forward to that. So it's $20 to $40, sliding scale, but of course no one is turned away for lack of funds, and you can register online at Open Door Yoga.
On Thursday, February 13th, coming up in less than a week from now, is our vegan bake sale. The proceeds will go towards Animal Voices, Drishti Point Yoga Radio, and also VOCRA, Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association. So come out, help the kitties. We are hosting it at Unity Yoga and Tea House. That's just on East 10th at Commercial, 4 to 7 p.m. Make sure to bring your own container for cookies, cupcakes, and more. We're excited about that.
I'm making truffles.
Yum. I'm going to buy lots of yummy sweet treats. Yep, and then one last, there's actually another screening next week, which is Meet the Truth. So Liberation BC is screening Meet the Truth. Meet the Truth is a documentary that talks about livestock farming and kind of leaves off where Inconvenient Truth inconveniently left off. I've seen this documentary. It's really great. I recommend everybody see it. Admission is free, and it's at the Vancouver Public Library this Tuesday, February 11th at 7, and it's at the Alice McKay Room on the lower level, and that's a Central Library, 350 West Georgia Street.
Yeah, if anyone's interested in knowing basically everything that you need to know in documentary format of the environmental impacts of the meat industry, this is a film not to be missed for sure. It's really well done.
And finally today, I just wanted to mention every Saturday at the downtown Vancouver Art Gallery on the south side along Robson at the stairs there is the Vegan Information Booth. This is a collective of just passionate vegans who want to speak out. It's not organized by any particular group. So if you want to come volunteer and talk to people about veganism and animal rights, you're welcome to join. Or if you want to come by and ask people questions about veganism that have been burning on your mind, whether it's about food, activism, or other questions, there will be lots of experienced vegans there to answer your questions. So that's all we have for events today. If you would like to suggest something we have on the show, please just send us an email. It's radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Alyssa. So you're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, Vancouver's Co-op Radio, CFRO, broadcasting live in the downtown east side in unceded Coast Salish territories. Our first interview is with Gerard McKinnon, a volunteer with Food Not Bombs Vancouver. Food Not Bombs is a volunteer collective that serves vegan meals in the downtown East Side every Friday. Food Not Bombs is a local chapter of an international network of autonomous collectives that challenge the gross misallocation of resources. Hi, Jared, and welcome to the Gerard, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Can you tell us how did you get involved with Food Not Bombs, and why did you get involved?
Well, originally I started working with Food Not Bombs when I was living in Edmonton, and I've had a love of cooking for a long time, and I had been not doing a lot of activism or volunteer work for some time. And I was looking for something interesting to do, and I saw an ad in a local paper that Food Not Bombs was looking for a space to cook at. And I happened to be living in a nice cooperative co-housing apartment building at the time that had a common kitchen, and I thought this was a good opportunity to share our resources with Food Not Bombs and to do something that where I could engage in my love of cooking without having to cook meat, because Food Not Bombs is vegetarian and vegan. So it seemed like a good opportunity. I took it, and I've been doing Food Not Bombs ever since. That was about 8 years ago.
8 years ago. Wow. Yeah. And now you're doing it in Vancouver.
Right. And then I moved to Vancouver about 4 years ago. And we started, we were serving out of Downtown Eastside Residents Association at the time. Mm-hmm. On the Downtown Eastside. And we've gone through various incarnation since then. We're serving at Pigeon Park for a while, doing a lot of work at Occupy Vancouver for a while. And now actually we're serving on Commercial Drive. We were serving on the downtown side for a while, but really just about a block north of the Commercial Broadway SkyTrain station, Fridays at about 6:30.
Is
our current serving space. But
cool. And for people who don't know, can you explain Food Not Bombs and how it works?
No.
As an organization.
No. Well, I mean, it had its start about just over 30 years ago, around 1980, in the United States. And the people there, really, their first concern was anti-war activism, anti-nuclear activism, thus the name Food Not Bombs. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that so much, is, you know, particularly in the U.S., mm-hmm. So much of the, national resources in the United States go towards the military, and so much food goes to waste. Mm-hmm. And that seemed like an odd thing to the people who started Food Not Bombs. And then since then, it's spread to Food Not Bombs has spread internationally to about 1,000 different cities around the world. It's really, again, changes a little bit, I think, depending on who's involved in it and where it is and what the concerns of the people involved are. But it's always the case that we take vegan or vegetarian food that would otherwise go to waste. Mm-hmm. And we come together to just cook up healthy vegan meals for people, anybody who's hungry, so anybody who's wants to eat can eat, so it's not like a soup kitchen where you have to jump through hoops or prove to people that you have certain needs or fill out any forms or anything. You just show up and eat. Mm-hmm. And it's also a collective group where we come together and there aren't any leaders. We just decide what we want to do together. And ideally, it's something where the people that we're interacting with and the people we're serving are free to participate. So we try to be as low barrier as possible, I'll say, and to encourage inclusivity between us and the people that we serve.
That's awesome. So it's more of like a solidarity model as opposed to a charity model.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's great. And we're Animal Voices. We're a vegan radio show. So can you talk about the vegan aspect of Food Not Bombs? What is the philosophy behind the vegan meals? Why do they have it that way?
Well, again, it varies, I think, from group to group, but it's always we never serve meat. I think the idea behind it is twofold. For the way that we serve, the kind of ad hoc way that we sometimes bring together our servings, it's mm-hmm. sometimes dangerous. It would be dangerous for people to serve meat. Mm-hmm. But mostly it's based on compassionate grounds that we try to work against violence, against structural violence for people and animals, and it's through serving healthy, you know, vegan food, one of the things that ways that can impact people, I think, is those people who are not used to eating vegetarian or vegan food, you know, see that it's possible to eat delicious, easy to prepare, healthy meals that don't have meat in them, so they may not have encountered that in their lives before. So, I mean, we're trying to, you know, help our animal comrades as well by avoiding serving meat.
That's awesome. Do you ever have any people ask why, you know, when you're serving, or did they mention, or just, you know, because, I mean, I'm a vegan, and sometimes I serve food, and people often forget that there's no meat in it because it's just, you know, so delicious. So,
do they ever say, where's
right,
the meat?
Right. I mean, it depends on, you know, sometimes when they're on the fly on the street, we have conversations of varying depth. So sometimes we have to make a quick comment. Other times we get into a long conversation about it. But yeah, I mean, sometimes people ask about it, and we talk about our commitment to you know, helping our animal friends. You know, other times we just, you know, people ask if there's meat in it, they try it, and then they're surprised that it tastes good.
Yeah.
So they enjoy it, and then they, you know, that maybe they'll think of doing that in their lives. They're not a feed up bumps.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can you tell us about your weekly serves? How many volunteers participate? Where do the donations come from?
Right. Well, right now we're getting a lot of donations from Discovery Organics, and they're a food wholesaler. So they, you know, sell not to the public directly, but to stores and places that and sell it to the public. So they have tons of food, and like so many stores and restaurants and et cetera, they can't use everything that they stock. Mm-hmm. So they, rather than throw it away, they donate a lot of it, and some of that goes to us. So Discovery Organics is a big supporter right now, and also Terra Breads. We pick up bread every week from Terra Breads, and it's kind of odd to. I mean, it's great to see them want to have their food used in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's kind of disappointing when you show up somewhere and you realize just how much of the food that they produce
goes to waste.
So yeah. Sometimes you show up at a place and then you there's boxes and boxes or bags and bags and bags of food. It's just not used because of the way that our food system works, and it's kind of a shame. So at least, you know, some of that food at these places that donate to us is not going to waste, but it kind of reminds you how much much food goes to waste all over the place.
Gerard, it's Alyssa here. Just curious, are there rules about what kind of food you can serve according to, you know, the city? And do you ever get food that you got from a dumpster, like dumpster dive?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, technically, and if you look at them, like I was saying earlier, people in different Food Not Bombs groups in different places take different approaches. Officially, if you look at the Food Not Bombs website, the international one, they say we don't use dumpster food, but, you know, sometimes we would. So different groups might do that. Right now, we tend, you know, not to do that, but, I mean, I have, you know, a lot of friends who do dumpster dive a lot, and you know, it's an interesting thought. You know, that I mean, just because something was in a box inside a building 1 minute, and then 5 minutes later it's inside a box inside a dumpster, you know, it doesn't really magically change into garbage.
Yeah, just in our minds.
Yeah, just in our minds. So I mean, we tend not to do that these days in this particular group, but it's something that is, you know, people in Food Not Bombs, it's their choice. It's it's all of our choices to do that or not.
Yeah, it's just amazing how much food gets wasted. When I lived in Australia, I worked at a vegetarian restaurant there, and we had trouble donating our food. There were some legalities against it.
And we don't run into that a lot. I mean, there are certainly internationally, there are stories that come out frequently, and in Food Not Bombs history internationally, where they've run into trouble with the police and communities enacting laws really specifically in order to prevent what Food Not Bombs is doing.
Yeah.
I've only really experienced that personally once or twice. I was in Grandview Park one time. Another thing that we do sometimes is if we get a lot of bananas and it's around the summertime, we freeze the bananas and then we get a bicycle blender from Pedal, the organization, community organization Pedal, a bike-powered blender, and we make smoothies for people. Vegan smoothies.
Nice.
So it's in the park doing that. I was making vegan smoothies and just giving them to people. And a park ranger came and threw me out of the park. And I had a bit of a conversation with him, and the people around me were very supportive of me. The other people who were in the park were, in that case, I kind of left because the bicycle powered blender didn't belong to us.
Yeah. didn't want to get it confiscated,
and it wasn't.
I saw a picture of that being used.
But then we came back later. We got a bunch of vegetables and came back to the park about an hour and a half later, and just kept giving out food. Which is often, Food Not Bombs' response. If we get forced out of an area, we'll just leave and then come back. Slightly later and keep going.
Keep feeding people. And we only have a couple more minutes, but what kind of foods do you serve? I'm just curious.
It's interesting that I was talking with for special events we don't always just serve at our weekly serving. We also, if we're asked to do some special events, we'll occasionally do that, and that's, it works quite differently. Other than our kind of summertime foray into smoothies, we generally serve based on what we receive. So we do a pickup at Discovery, and we never know what we're going to get. Today, for example, I'm just looking at a big bag of beets here, and some leeks and green onions, some mixed greens, kiwis, tomatoes, mushrooms. We have parsnips. So I'm thinking today we'll probably make a borscht with some potatoes and parsnips and beets and such. If we had gotten different vegetables, we would have made something else. So it tends to be, dull as it sounds, it is often a stew because it's easy to make some sort of soup or stew, often roasted vegetables, fruit salads, things of that.
That sounds delicious.
Cooked barley or cooked rice, that sort of thing. So today's probably going to be a borscht with some barley and vegetables.
I think that would be really exciting for you to find, discover what you have and be able to share all this delicious plant-based food with people based on all of these food donations that have come in, and you don't know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's challenging, but it's really fun. It's like an adventure in eating cooking.
Yeah, you get to use your creativity and your intuition and just kind of, it's amazing. I would love to be involved in Food Not Bombs.
Me too.
And so can you tell us how we can get involved, how our viewers can get involved, our listeners? Viewers, we're on the radio.
they could be looking at the radio.
Yeah, they could.
Right now we're cooking out of my house. Ideally, you're going to find a bigger space. But for now, strangely, I think it's strange, the way to find information about us is either come to the serving or go on Facebook. I find it odd myself how many things work by people checking on Facebook these days. Mm. But that's how we're working right now. So if they enter Food Not Bombs Vancouver, on their Facebook page, or they can email fnbvan@gmail.com, and I'll respond to them that way. Or they can just show up Friday at 6:30, show up at the serving and just eat some food and check it out.
Cool.
Where do you serve these days?
Yeah, it's hard to give the address because it's that odd road. I was calling it 8th Avenue for a while, but it's, I guess, Grandview.
Okay.
Highway or something. It's about a non-commercial drive on the east side of the street, about a block north of the commercial Broadway SkyTrain station. History Road.
Look for the lineup.
Look for the lineup. It's between 7th and Broadway.
All right, I can picture that.
So we'll be there around 6:30 to 8 o'clock is usually our time frame when we're there serving.
Awesome.
And then we cook usually around 1:30 to 6.
Six.
Somewhere thereabouts.
Cool. So you need volunteers to help cook, you need volunteers to serve, you need volunteers to clean up. So yeah, hopefully people will contact you. Thank you so much for being on the show, Gerard. And speaking about Food Not Bombs, I know you have to go get ready now to start cooking. So have a great cook. That borscht sounds delicious. If I didn't have plans this evening with my parents, I would definitely come by. So as you mentioned, you can join and learn more about Food Not Bombs through Facebook at Food Not Bombs Vancouver. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we also had Keith Henry, who was the founder of Food Not Bombs, on our show on August 5th, 2011. So you can go to animalvoices.org and search that.
Keith McHenry.
Keith McHenry. Oh, I forgot the Mick part. Sorry. Great.
You are listening to 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver's co-op radio, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. So just a couple news items for you before we get to our feature interview with Mark DeVries, the director of Speciesism, the movie. That's coming up at 12:35, if you're listening live. So news, animal lovers around the world have been waiting anxiously for updates on two orcas destined for display in Sochi at the 2014 Winter Olympics. One of the whales, a young female named Narnia, was captured in August 2012 by a consortium of companies known as White Sphere off Russia's coast. And a year later, a young male was captured in September 2013. And just a couple months after, both orcas were transported to Moscow. Since the transport, barely any clear news has surfaced about these two captive victims, but now Eric Hoyt, a research fellow and head of Global Marine Protected Areas Program at Whale and Dolphin Conservation, has confirmed that Narnia and her male companion will not be on display in Sochi during the Olympics. What's more, no dolphin will carry an Olympic torch, as was originally planned.
Yay.
Eric Hoyt explains that there had been a plan to send orcas to Sochi, but not necessarily to the Olympics in early December, but it was postponed. The Sochi Dolphin was involved in the capture of seven orcas in the Okhotsk Sea in 2013. So at some point they may be expected to make delivery. For now, at least two orcas, including Narnia, are staying in small pens in Moscow, while others have gone to China. No orcas are performing yet in Russia or China. They're probably being trained, I guess, for circus shows. So there's, I guess, a bit of a relief that they're not being displayed at the Olympics, but still there was eight orcas caught in the last couple of years there by White Sphere for the purposes of captivity in marine parks. So not much of a celebration. There is a petition online at someofus.org that sumofus.org, and it's asking the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions and SeaWorld, another member of them, to kick White Sphere out of that trade association. So that could make a statement. It is perfectly legal in Russia to capture wild orcas, though in many other places it has been outlawed. In the U.S., it was outlawed back in 1989 to capture wild orcas. And here in Canada, I think it's also not legal, but there is a loophole where you can bring in orcas that have been captured elsewhere.
And rescue them. So other news, there was 300 animals that were seized last Wednesday at a nonprofit animal sanctuary called Napier's Log Cabin Horse and Animal Sanctuary in Florida. Deputies say they seized dogs, cats, and horses and other animals because of their poor health. Some of the horses there were hundreds of pounds overweight, and investigators are considering possible animal cruelty and fraud charges. I don't know why they're considering. They should be doing it.
They were overweight?
They were overweight?
Underweight.
Very,
did I say overweight?
Yeah.
Underweight.
That's very unusual.
No. Underweight. Yeah, no. They were making them obese. No, that was the opposite. They were very underweight, which is really sad and interesting because I went on the website of this Napier Sanctuary and they offer horseback riding of these animals. And they have many cats and horses. And the investigators also found 20 dead animals in shallow graves. And 12 of the, they found 12 dogs that they had to euthanize because they were so sick. And 8 dogs were just found dead. So it sounds like a bit of a hoarding situation. The owners were out of town. The children were supposed to watch 300 animals, but nobody did. It just shows you that if somebody used the word sanctuary, you always have to be careful with what that actually is, because there can be hoarding situations that happen with these animals. So yeah, that's a bit of sad news out of Florida.
I just have one quick other point of news. Idaho's $2.5 billion dairy industry wants to put people who film their operations in jail for up to a year and a $5,000 fine. This is a bid to block animal rights groups from spying on farms in hopes of catching animal cruelty on tape. It's known as an ag gag bill. It's backed by some of the largest milk producers in the U.S. The measure was introduced in Idaho this week as a response to videos produced in 2012 by Mercy for Animals at one of Idaho's largest dairies, where there's 60,000 cows. A member of Mercy for Animals got a job at Betancourt Dairies and captured images of terrible cruelty, caning, beating, stomping on cows that had fallen on the farm's concrete floor. And Idaho's milk producers blame animal rights groups for trying to sabotage their operations. And the groups, meanwhile, contend that they're trying to expose the operations that mistreat their animals. Well, it's institutionalized cruelty, really. It's not just particular farms, of course. Mm-hmm. And Utah is among states with a similar law. So this is, these ag gag laws are becoming more and more popular, but there is quite a big backlash against them.
Definitely. Awesome. You're listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver's Co-op Radio, broadcasting live from the downtown east side in Vancouver. Now for a feature interview with Mark DeVries, director of Speciesism, the movie. Mark was born and grew up in New York City. We are reaching him now in Washington, D.C., where he is currently a law student. Hello, Mark, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks very much for having me on.
Thanks for being here. First, let me say I've just seen Speciesism, and I really enjoyed it, so I'm super excited to speak to you about it.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad you did.
Yeah. So why did you make this film? You clearly weren't involved in animal rights. Most animal rights films are usually made by animal rights people. So how did you even get on this path, and why did you make this documentary?
Right. Well, one of the interesting things is I think that's one of the strong points or beneficial aspects of the film, that it's taking the view of someone who's not already convinced and therefore is a lot easier for people who are not familiar with the issues to feel like they're learning about it in a non-confrontational way, which seems very helpful.
Mm-hmm,
I actually came across it in college. I just came across some demonstrations and protests from organizations like PETA and a few others in Washington, D.C. and New York, and I saw them and I got kind of curious about what was going on in terms of what they were being motivated by. And soon after that, I looked into factory farming, and I went deeper and deeper into the investigation and decided to start filming. And then, of course, after that, I found out about speciesism and the whole intellectual or philosophical revolution, really, that's being presented in terms of our attitudes towards non-human animals. And that, of course, got me into that side of the film.
Mm-hmm. So for people who haven't seen the film, can you tell a little bit about it?
Like
a little synopsis.
Right. So I started out, as I mentioned, looking into factory farming, which is, of course, the circumstance I was looking at them in the United States. But they're the circumstance of course, thousands of animals being raised for food, thousands in a single building where everything is controlled to the T, the lighting and the air and so forth, so that they're basically just like machines in a factory. And, of course, they suffer terribly for their entire lives. It's like a science fiction dystopia. It's really bizarre to see. And so I was investigating that, although the film itself doesn't include graphic types of footage, again, so that it's not disturbing or difficult to watch, you know. But anyway, I went from investigating that, and I can talk with you more about details of some of the investigations, to learning about this idea called speciesism, which is this philosopher in the 1970s named Peter Singer wrote a book back in the 70s called Animal Liberation, where he argued that our sort of unthinking assumption against taking the suffering of animals seriously is a form of prejudice, similar to prejudice against groups of humans, like racism. So he popularized the term speciesism, and he is now a professor at Princeton, and many other other scholars have picked up on the idea and are writing about it and talking about it more and more. And it was really, at first it just seemed like an abstract sort of intellectual thing of no real consequence. Like, it's an interesting idea that we have this sort of prejudice against taking animals seriously. But if their arguments are right, that we're not justified in making this sharp ethical distinction between humans and all of the other species, it would make what happens on these factory farms one of the most important issues, if not perhaps the most important issue of our time.
Definitely. Definitely. So you spoke to these prominent philosophers like Singer and even Francione. What did some of them say in particular that helped you make the connection? Because some people can think about it, but you actually made the connection. So what was it?
Right. Well, you mentioned Gary Francione, and he is a professor at Rutgers University in the United States, in New Jersey. And he is well known for talking about arguments pertaining to the property status of non-human animals. And that really had an impact on me. He explains, and he talks about in the film, that if we think that if we can't justify speciesism, if we think that we can't find a good reason to believe that we should consider non-human animals to be not important ethically, so if they do matter, then there seems to be an inherent conflict between animals mattering and our using them as property, as economic commodities, that in an industry where we are using them as commodities, we can't possibly be taking their interests into comparable consideration with human interests. And that really struck me, and there seems to be a lot behind that, especially the more I looked into some of the farms that attempted to be less inhumane and so forth, and the difficulties that they ran into as a result of the economic pressures to produce more animals.
Yeah, that brings up kind of one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because I'm a holistic nutritionist, so I kind of work in this holistic field where I constantly battle this humane meat myth or happy animals myth. And so I really resonated the part where you went to this free range, I think it was turkey farm, were they turkeys?
Right.
Yeah, and it was basically looked like a factory farm to me, and it was considered like Whole Foods certified humane. Like, what was it like in there?
Right. It was, so we went to this farm thinking that if there were going to be turkeys outside in the grass and so forth.
Frolicking.
Right, exactly. Partially because the photograph on their website showed just that, turkeys in the grass. And it turns out that the way that photograph came about is that they have the turkeys live in one shed for the first half of their lives, and then at one point they walk across this little grassy area for like 3 minutes to this other shed across the way that they live out the rest of their lives in, and the photographs are snapped while they're taking that walk.
How long's that walk? Like 2 minutes?
Less.
It was a 1 minute slice of their life. Wow, that represents their company.
And and they the rest of their lives they were living about with about 3 square feet per bird at their full weight, which is certainly less. Or more space than an average so-called, you know, standard farm. But, of course, it was still so bad that they were literally at risk of cannibalizing each other under the stress, which is why they have to do things like slicing off parts of their beaks and toes, even in this supposedly less bad farm.
It sounds a lot like our organic standards. There, people think that the standards mean that the animals are treated in a respectful way, but there's still often, like you said, those mutilations and pretty intense confinement. It's very interesting for people to learn that.
Yeah, and that farm was organic as well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And did they let you in quite easily? Because I know you had, you can talk maybe a bit about the issues you had to getting into the factory farms. Were the, you know, right. humane, happy farms, were they also hard to get into?
Well, the interesting thing is, yes, as you mentioned, we spent a lot of time, as you see in the film, basically just walking on to the property of standard factory farms and confronting the owners and asking them questions. And we got a very interesting, you know, unplanned interview with the owner of a giant egg farm, as you see in the film. Mm-hmm. Certainly a combative interview. Whereas on this turkey farm, and this really, I think, indicates their mindset about the treatment of animals. They were really proud of this operation and proud of the standards that they had there, which of course for any just average person coming in and seeing that would be something that they would consider very severe animal cruelty. I mean, these animals being kept in these sheds for their entire lives with very little space and under extreme stress and so forth. But that was considered not only something that they didn't at all mind inviting us right in to see, but that was an example from their perspective of something exemplary, which I think should give us an idea of what even the more humane farms are like when they are the ones that they are not necessarily just inviting people in. So this is the among the better of the humane farms even.
Wow. And yeah, I remember they, in that part in the film, they had that wheelbarrow and they were just like, oh, this is a wheelbarrow where we just pick out, you know, the dead carcasses that end up.
Yeah.
It was so. Yeah. Well, I think that I'm really glad that you added that part, because I think oftentimes people watch these movies and they think it's just factory farms. They don't realize
right.
that these humane, I say that in quotes, humane, happy places aren't that these animals, when they're used as commodities, this is what's going to happen. So other parts of your film, you talked, you had a lot of parts about environmental aspects as well, mm-hmm. which I found quite interesting. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I went down to North Carolina to investigate the pig farms there, and I anticipated focusing on just the factory buildings themselves and the pigs in there and so forth. But what I learned as I was researching that is there's a just mind-boggling environmental disaster going on, most notably there in eastern North Carolina, but it's also, of course, going on in many places. But in this particular instance, these pig farms, which have thousands of pigs per building, all of the manure gets flushed into these giant open-air cesspools. I know, it's gross. And it was even, believe me, more so to see in person. And they just sit there. They're like a lake of pig manure. And then to lower the levels of the cesspools, they actually have pipes from the cesspools to these fields where they're not really growing anything. And the pipes just stick up in the air and spray the manure up to, say, around 20 feet, straight up into the air where it turns into mist and just travels away, often onto people's houses and cars and other property. And the neighbors there, whom we spoke with, as you see in the film, I mean, it makes their lives miserable. They don't know when all of a sudden they're going to just be overcome with this horrific odor coming right into their house at any time of day or night. Some of them, older people, when they walk outside of their houses, they actually fall down sometimes just as a result of not being able to breathe because of the stench from these hog farms. I mean, it was just a really good example of how out of control things have gotten in this industry.
Yeah. It's insane. So with all that now, are you now vegan?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And I became vegan while making the film, which really is certainly telling in terms of how learning about this and not just the facts, but also the arguments can impact people. And I've received a lot of correspondence and spoken with a lot of people personally who became vegan after watching the film, and even more so people whose friends and family became, you know, family members and so forth became vegan after they, say, like an animal advocate, gave them the film or showed them the film, including people who, you know, other things had not affected them before. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it may have to do with the focus on the intellectual grounding for what appears to be our inability to justify using animals for things like food.
Yeah, I think all, you know, different kind of movies work for different people, but the one thing I liked about your movie is it doesn't have as much graphic imaging. I think sometimes graphic images is good. It's what got my partner to go vegan, but right. I think for some people they won't even want to watch a movie, and I like that you had little bits of it, but I think having different types of movies and people resonating with some things and not resonating with others, and I think right. It's amazing that you've got such great feedback. I'm really excited that we are screening the film, and so hopefully we will get some vegans out of it as well.
One aspect that I particularly like about your film, it's not just the analytical arguments that you're presenting, which I think, as you said, will really resonate with some people, but it's a funny film. Can you talk about that? Did you venture out to make a film that people would laugh through while you're approaching these serious subjects, or is that just sort of the way you are, and that just sort of came through the film because it's your story, your journey? How can you talk about that?
Well, I did intend to make it lighthearted, at least, you know.
As light as it could be.
Right, that's exactly what I was going to say, at least to the extent that certain parts can be lighthearted, so that it would be something that people can get, that animal advocates can get friends and family and colleagues to watch and can host screenings and so forth. And that, you know, people are willing to then watch it and watch the whole thing. And also, it seems to be helpful, not just with this film, but animal advocacy in general, to take the perspective of speaking with people about your thought process, letting them into your thought process. So in this film, you know, it was my adventure learning about these issues and speaking with the philosophers and so forth, rather than me talking to you about, meaning the audience, about what they should or shouldn't do. And by making it my journey and you following along with my journey, it makes it non-confrontational. And that also is very helpful just with speaking with people every day. People, animal advocates speaking with people, letting them into your thought process. Well, I learned about factory farming and I can't justify supporting it. See how I can justify supporting it. The more I've been learning about it, blah, 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 and so forth, seems to be a very valuable approach.
And so now the film's out. What do you recommend for people to do after watching the film? Do you have any next steps, obviously, to become vegan?
Well, yeah.
But how do you support people to do that?
Yeah, the film's website is speciesismthemovie.com. And, of course, speciesism is the word species, like a species of animal, and then ISM, like racism, themovie.com. And if you go to the website and you click saw the movie in the menu bar at the top, it has some information, some answers to the basic questions, many of the questions that people most often have after watching the film. And one of them is, of course, I'd like to change how I eat. Where should I start in terms of looking for information? And we have links to two really outstanding websites, I think the best that I've seen on vegan eating, one run by Mercy for Animals and the other one run by PETA. So if you go to speciesismthemovie.com and click saw the movie, you'll see the links to those two sites on vegan eating. And then there's also information about advocacy and effective advocacy, like I briefly mentioned about in terms of the approach when you're speaking with people. And also we have multi-DVD packs that we've priced as low as we can afford so that people can use the film, get multiple copies, and give it to others and show it to others and so forth so that you can affect more people.
That's awesome. Thank you, Mark, so much for being on the Animal Voices show. It was lovely speaking to you.
Thank you.
And thank you for making the movie. We really enjoyed it, and we're really excited to screen it on February 14th as part of our Cultivating Compassion event. And you can find out more information and get your own DVD of Speciesism at speciesismthemovie.com.
If you're going to be at the screening, I invite you and encourage you to buy one of our DVDs that we'll have for sale there, because they're probably the only ones that you can get in Vancouver. They'll be $25 each. So you have been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Next Friday is Valentine's Day, and we will have a special show for this day. We'll be asking people the question, do you think humans are the only beings to experience love? Plus, we'll have a feature interview with animal behavior expert Jonathan Balcombe on animal love and mating rituals. So please tune in for that show on February 14th. Remember, next week is the Animal Voices and Drishti Points Cultivating Compassion Week. So we will have the vegan bake sale on the Thursday, the film screening of Speciesism, raffle and reception on the Friday, and our yoga workshop on Saturday. Please visit animalvoices.org for all the details concerning those events, and we hope to see you there. And if you appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, we do invite you to support the show by making a donation. You can do so at coopradio.org. We ask you also to keep connected to us via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing on to our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver. You can join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radio@animalvoices@gmail.com. And you can also check out our website, animalvoices.org, where all of our show podcasts can be listened to and downloaded from. So we are closing the show with the song One Species by True Nature. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.